This is number 9.
Let me discuss just a little bit longer the idea of systems, because it is so important, and any understanding of ministry really has to involve an understanding of the various components of the church or the various systems within the church as an entire system, as a whole. And so let me make a few more comments regarding that. Some systems theorists call a tendency of people in relationships to develop patterns and keep doing things the same way. They call that homeostasis. In other words, once an organization or a system gets in motion, it tends to keep going in the same way. And for certain systems to have years of doing things the same way, and they've been in relationship for many years, and the relationship has done this in the same way, then we know that change comes much more, is much harder to come by. Because the things and systems, once they get going in motion, tend to keep going in the same way. And this is very useful. It's very helpful as the various systems relate to one another. It's not all bad because, you know, think about it for a moment. If we could not depend on others to sit in the same place, to follow our agreed-upon rules, or to take various roles within an organization, within the church, I mean, it would take a great amount of energy and time just to relate to and work with one another. What would life be like if you didn't know which side of the bed was yours? As you and your wife, or you and your husband, go to bed at night. I mean, we all know which side we're supposed to sleep on. What would happen if a child didn't know what to expect when dad comes home from work, or when mom comes home from work? I mean, what will you eat? Will you do yard work? Is there going to be a fight? So there's some very positive benefits to homeostasis, because it provides some stability to the system and to the relationships within the church. So we need that. So homeostasis is this tendency for a system, a relationship, or a church or an organization to mold the behavior of others into predictable patterns, making it possible for us to get along, or to do the work, or to find safety, or to trust. So without this tendency, every time we would come together in a relationship, we would have to reinvent the relationship all over again. So homeostasis has some very positive benefits to it. Without it, we're unable to move much further because we're spending all of our time and energy reinventing the relationship. But when we have certain stable expectations and patterns of doing things, it's very helpful, and we come to expect that, and we can get on with doing other things in the church. So what we're talking about are patterns within the church. Now, sometimes that can become problematic, as I mentioned earlier. You can have rigid extremes, because getting into a no-change relationship between systems and within the church can be as problematic as being in flux about everything. And so in healthy relationships between systems or healthy relationships within an organization, either extreme is detrimental. You don't want to be too loose because that tends to be a bit chaotic, and you don't want to be so tight that you never change, that you never know what's going to happen next. So you have to have dependable commitments from people to and from one another and from the system within the organization. But if you have too much order, too much dependability, too much status quo, then the organization will not adapt to the changes in the environment. You will, in essence, inhibit the growth and development of the members of the group or the members within the system. And you will not adapt to the environment or to the call of God for your church. And that is to reach those around you. And every church has their sphere of influence. probably a prime example of this is an urban church, which was established for a certain time period in, to meet the needs of those in the urban environments. And as over time, as the landscape changes, the socioeconomic status of the urbanites change, and all of that changes, then if a church is stuck too rigid in homeostasis, then they do not adapt to the changing urban environment and thus become unattractive and unimpactful to the community around them. So there's a downside to homeostasis, but there's also a positive side. We want some of that, but we don't want to be too rigid in that. And so if the homeostasis forces are in charge or control the group or the system, then you will not be able to grow. And so I think a good understanding of ministry and what it's all about involves this understanding of the tension, this pull between chaos, too loose, too flux, and homeostasis. And the downside of that is being too rigid. So I mentioned this as a concept for you to understand and to familiarize yourself with. This whole concept of homeostasis, it needs to be in balance. You need to have some of it, but don't be too rigid. Don't be too flux. You can't throw it away because you need homeostasis. So you need this a good balance of this. And as you try to minister and put just the right amount of homeostasis within your organization or within systems operating with each other within the church or as sort of a mindset within the church, keep in mind this push and pull and this balance that is needed. So if you come in as a new pastor and you're trying to get rid of all the homeostasis, you're just going to end up in disaster because it's going to be chaos. You definitely need it, but you don't need too much of it. Now let me talk very briefly about systems and codependence. And sometimes analysts refer to people in systems as being codependent. And this may refer to the cooperation within the system to keep it functioning at one extreme end of this tight, loose spectrum that we just talked about. Probably a good example of this may be with a mother who tends to over-function in the family relationship. In other words, when she does everything for everybody in the family, she does the meals, she does the laundry, she does the house keeping, she does the nursing, she does the planning, she does everything to such a degree that others rely on her to keep the system going. And if she ever gets sick or the work stops or members of the family pressure her to get the work done, or instead of distributing the load in a just manner across the all the members of the family, the whole burden is placed on dad or sis who has to cover for mom. So there's this codependent pattern that is existing here. And we have the example of the overfunctioning of the mother and who's trying to keep the entire system going instead of distributing it equally. And people often refer to a codependent relationship in terms of these tendencies to maintain extreme or unhealthy patterns. And for many people, the word codependent means inappropriately cooperative with overly rigid or overly loose pattern behavior patterns. And they may use the example of the alcoholic family where members discount, cover, minimize, hide, or deny the drunk's dysfunctional behavior. Now, the problem with that type of an understanding or that type of definition of codependent assumes that the codependent is always functioning at the extreme tight end of the scale and needs to loosen up or be more differentiated or reduce dependence on another. And it's true that some loosening may be needed, but not to the extent that one disengages or pulls out of the relationship. In other words, since we are overly dependent on each other, we sometimes have a tendency to break all dependency upon one another. And I don't think that breaking all dependency is possible in relationships. I think there's healthy interdependence that goes on. And every relationship is codependent to some degree, or it's not even really a relationship. And every system is codependent to some degree, or it's not a system. So if you find that some of the systems within your church or organization are codependent in an unhealthy way, it does no good to break the relationship and have no dependence whatsoever. Because we need, as leaders, to differentiate ourselves from the anxiety of the system. But we still need to be connected, and that's the key here. That's the trick that I'm trying to get across here. If you leave, you have no system. And if you leave for a short time and return, but you don't change those dysfunctional patterns or codependent patterns, then you're not differentiated. So you're still caught up in the patterns that you've established for yourself or the systems have established for themselves. So here the key point is to not, when you find that systems within churches or organizations are codependent relationship, they really need each other in a sense to conduct their work and go about the business of the church. Sometimes there's an overdependence on that, but you don't simply break off the relationship or the work relationship. Because if you do that, you have no relationship, you have no system anymore. So what you want to do is to differentiate yourself from the anxiety of the system or the dysfunctionality of the system, and at the same time stay connected enough to begin to work toward changing those patterns. Now the next important point I want to bring up is this whole idea of agreements within systems. And this happens all the time within the church, within your organization. We have agreements between the various systems or components within the church. Systems continue because of agreements that they have or contracts that people make with one another. And sometimes these contracts are formal. Sometimes they're very public. Sometimes they're written. For instance, a church constitution is a formal contract which people have as to the nature and purpose of the church and how it will function and operate. That is a formal type of contract. Marriage vows are another type of formal contract that we have, obviously that are needed for the relationship. We have this contract says we are no longer single, we are married. Together, we take these vows and we take them seriously. Job descriptions within the church, and many churches don't have these, but if they do, they are a type of bringing a bit of formality, some sort of agreement to say, if I fill this position, this is what's expected of me, and this is what I will do. But not all of the agreements are formal agreements. There are also informal agreements, and this is simply an understanding in which the various systems or the various parties are aware that a bargain is being made and they communicate directly about what they're going to do or what they're not going to do. Husband and wife say, would you mind picking up the kids on your way home from work tonight? No, I'd be happy to do that. It's right on my way. I'll pick them up. That's an informal contract, an informal agreement. It's usually verbal. It may be public or it may be private. If you are a staff member of a large church or if you are on the leadership board of your particular church, sometimes you discuss what's needed, what's going to be done, and who's going to do it and when they're going to get it done. And there's no written formal agreement on that, but and it's public and it's very informal, but we have this agreement. So we have formal contracts, we have informal contracts in between people and systems, and we also have tacit agreements. And these sort of agreements have to do with the habits and patterns of that people establish as they interact with one another over over time as they establish relationships with each other. And there's no writing or clear discussion, but expectations have developed. For instance, if you're having a leadership meeting and you know who usually sits where, and if somebody sits out of place, they say, they're saying, that's my seat. And it's kind of an unwritten tacit agreement because that's the way it's always been. And, sometimes you always call if you're not going to make it home for lunch. And it's just a customary practice that you've been in the habit of doing. And so they're called tacit agreements that people come to expect. And sometimes these expectations are helpful, and other times they are not so helpful. For instance, you can have an expectation that somebody's going to mess up, or that they always do, in a sense, can be a negative type of non-conscious agreement. In other words, I didn't think you'd do that right, just like you never do anything right. And that's a very negative way of looking at it. But these tacit agreements can be either positive or negative. So there's formal, informal, and tacit contracts. Let's explore this in a little more detail. Let's take rules, for example, within an organization. Formal rules, if you have rules, you have formal rules, you have informal rules, and you have tacit rules. Formal rules are very easy to identify. They're the laws, the constitutions, the policies, for instance. They're usually written. They're usually public agreements that people have made and about what is appropriate, what is inappropriate behavior. In other words, what time worship will be held, what day it's going to be on, how many services we're going to hold. Those are all rules that are in a formal type of a mode. You also have informal rules. I see. Here we go with the formal, informal, and tacit with regard to this category called rules. Informal rules are agreements made about things on an ad hoc or temporary basis. For instance, we don't necessarily have a written rule that crying babies go to the nursery, but informally we have agreed in the committee that deals with this that if your baby's crying, you go to the nursery. For instance, if you're going to buy a new shirt and you can't make up your mind which one to buy, you ask someone to help make a decision for you. So informal rules would be special cases. They would be spoken guidelines, not necessarily the formal standard operating procedures. Then you have the tacit rules that are silent agreements. And sometimes the parties are not even aware that they're even in what's called a tacit agreement. And tacit rules sometimes are very subtle, but we kind of all know what they are. In other words, with some churches, they have a tacit rule that certain norms exist. For instance, on how a church deals with conflict. We never really state it publicly, but we know that around here, the pastor runs everything, or we just don't discuss conflict in our church. We don't want to bring up anything like that. We have dress codes for people. If you're coming to worship on Sunday morning, then we expect you to dress nice. Sometimes there's tacit agreements about certain subjects that you just don't talk about. And in your own household, you have these formal rules as well. You have the formal things of you're married. You have the vows between you and your spouse. You have the informal spoken guidelines. And you also have the tacit expectations that go along with your household as well. And the reason I'm bringing these up, these various categories and types of contracts, is to show you that the minute they're modified, the minute they change, the minute you're adding to them, the system notices these sort of things. And, you know, for instance, if a tacit rule, if a tacit expectation is changed, the system will know that. And it has to do something. The system notices that something is out of balance, and it tries to pull people back into the previous pattern. Now, we talked about a category called rules, but also there's another category within the church that has to do with roles. In other words, we make agreements, formal, informal, and tacit, with regard to, within the life of a system, as to who has to do what and what are the responsibilities of the various members or parts of the whole system. Who does what? How much authority is related to the various tasks? And, of course, we have formal roles. They're easy to identify. We have the president, the secretary, the pastor, the moderator, the board chairman, Sunday school teacher. They're usually described in the Constitution, the Book of Order, those sort of things. We acknowledge these roles as being necessary to function as a church. We all agree upon them. Then you have also the informal roles that are usually established on the spot by mutual agreement. For instance, you know, oftentimes in the smaller churches, they're looking for ushers, someone to help with the offering. And if someone who's scheduled for that doesn't show, then they wait right before the offering, and then they go tap someone on the shoulder, and they know that it's their role. Will you help with the offering? And it's their role to do that. It's an informal thing. It's an informal rule that if someone taps you on the shoulder and asks you to do it, you play that role. That would be an informal example of that. Tacit roles are also powerful influences upon organizational life and church life and the systems within the entire church. And some people take on roles, or they're given roles necessary for the maintenance of life in the organization. I mean, there's always someone in the church who has their eye on the finances of the church, and they don't have a formal role to play. They don't even have an informal role, but they have a tacit agreement that is my role here in the church. And they always add up the numbers. They want to make sure everything squares out okay. And they're the ones who keep their eye on the pastor's mileage account, who didn't turn off the lights in the building, and these sort of things. Nobody appointed that person, but we allow that person to do that by common consent. And so he or she functions as a steward of church resources or church property, and we allow him to take on that particular role. And sometimes they're a pain in the backside. But you can, because when we're talking about tacit, the category of tacit, we're talking about either positive or negative. But oftentimes when you have these tacit roles and something happens, the person leaves, the person dies, the church or the system begins to look for another individual to fulfill that tacit agreement or that tacit role. Now, a third aspect of organizational life and the systems would be the area called rituals. And this area impacts the way systems function. Rituals help us to get through transitions, help us to get into and out of relationships. It helps us to move into new positions and recognize changes that's taking place within the system or within the larger environment. So rituals, in other words, help the system recognize the changes that are taking place in others. A wedding, for instance, sends a message to the rest of the community that we should relate differently to these two individuals who are now one. They are now getting married. So rituals are a means that to help the system adjust to new roles and new realities. But rituals are also a way that a system identifies itself. And we are the people who do these rituals. For instance, if you've been brought up in one particular church, they have their own special rituals there that make the church unique and its own. And if you were to go to another church of the very same denomination, you would feel a bit different because they have different rituals which help them to identify themselves as being unique. And formal rituals have been a part the church life for a long time. They were written in a prayer book, a bulletin. The hymnal, they're distributed to the congregation. Formal rituals are developed over time within systems. And they're formal. They have to do with formal things such as worship, funerals, weddings, prayer services, baptisms, confirmations, ordinations, inductions of new ministers. These sort of things would be formal rituals that churches participate in.